It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2020, Tomas Karlovits, returning MOI Global Instructor, somebody that I'm sure our members will be very familiar with. I have enjoyed Tomas's presentations tremendously in the past. Not just enjoyed them as great presentations, but also great ideas that actually went on to perform phenomenally well, I'd say. Tomas, of course, is founder of Blackwall Capital, which he started in 2014 after having worked in the equity research sector for more than two decades, including for more than a decade at Kepler Cheuvreux, where he was head of European equity research. Thomas also studied business administration and economics at the University in Vienna. Great to have you back, Thomas, to this year's event. I really look forward to your presentation. So without further ado, I'll turn it to you and I will be back for a Q&A at the end. Please go ahead.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for that invitation. It's always a pleasure to be here. The company I'd like to talk about today is called Mynaric. Mynaric is listed on the German Stock Exchange, and it has a market cap of about 250 million euro. I also like to add two remarks upfront. From a compliance perspective, it is important for you to know that we have been invested in Mynaric for many years. And secondly, we use in this presentation a lot of slides from Mynaric's corporate presentation, as we think they provide a quite good reflection of the investment case. So in a nutshell, Mynaric produces laser communication equipment for long distance, high data rate, secure, and spectrum-free wireless data transfer between aircraft, drones, satellites, and the ground. So essentially, they link everything flying at very high speeds through laser. It is a spin-off of the DLR, that's the German Aerospace Agency, researching for more than 20 years on laser, with partly exclusive licensing rights of DLR technology and no patents to avoid the disclosure of intellectual property. In fact, it is quite different to the usual stock market listed company. We consider it as a venture capital style investment in the pioneer of laser communications with the aim to become what we could say the Cisco of aerospace. Regarding the management team, there is a lot to say about the CEO, Bulent Altan, who joined the company in early 2019. Bulent began his career as one of the very first employees at the then newly established SpaceX in 2004, having graduated from Stanford University and following completion of his studies at the Technical University of Munich. At SpaceX, he was essentially the chief engineer, growing the company's avionics department from just seven people to over 200, and he was, as vice president, responsible for the avionics of the Falcon rockets as well as the Dragon capsule. In his latest role for the company, Bulent was vice president of satellite mission assurance for SpaceX satellite mega constellation called Starlink. Bulent then left SpaceX from 2014 to 2016 to co-found the startup ecosystem and aerospace industry in Europe, and was for a short duration also head of digital transformation and innovation at Airbus Defence and Space. He's also co-founder and partner of venture capital firm Global Space Ventures that invests exclusively in space-related businesses. So having him joining Mynaric caused a huge echo in the entire space industry and naturally opens every door in the world. Looking at today's world of communication, clients are obviously rather well-served in urban cities, although even that differs significantly from one location to the other, as we all experience in our day-to-day life. The more rural it gets, the lumpier the service quality. When it comes down to space, there are a total of about 2,400 satellites up there, which are typically in high altitude, without any link to each other, and those offering communication services do so with low bandwidth and high latency, all in a rather bad client experience, which on top of it is even unsecure in every respect. After the revolutionary success of SpaceX, the entire space industry is becoming the next big frontier to conquer. In terms of communication, offering internet to the real world, connectivity in the air and space, Earth observation and cybersecurity are still in their infancy but poised to explode. One way or the other, all big technology players in this world are currently engaging in this next big thing. The biggest player might be SpaceX. The project is called Starlink, intending to build up to 42,000 low-orbiting satellites over the long term. They started to deploy earlier in this year, currently flying about 60 satellites per Falcon into space twice a month, and they are targeting already about 1,600 satellites by the end of this year. Compare that to the 2,400 total satellites in space at the beginning of the year, and you see the massive growth that is currently taking place in front of our eyes. After SpaceX, Amazon, with a project named Kuiper, ranks second, targeting about 13,000 satellites in the long term. And then comes another dozen of companies, including Telesat, OneWeb, which is just resurfacing from a bankruptcy, and so on. But it also includes other players like Facebook or Google using balloons and other stuff. And this is just a commercial side, but there is also a military angle to which I would like to refer to a little bit later on. So next to Airbus TESAT, so TESAT is the unit of Airbus, whose technical equipment is far bigger in size, less capable in functionality, and far more expensive, Mynaric is, for our understanding, the only other company in the world having a full range of laser terminals. It includes both air terminal and ground station for air applications like drones, as well as a space terminal and the related optical ground stations. Ground stations are selling typically between $200,000 to $500,000 per unit. The Hawk air terminal has an average selling price of about $100,000 to $200,000, while the Condor space terminal has an average selling price of between $250,000 to $750,000. The main reason for this wide range of average selling prices is the order size, and only the very big orders should see the low prices. In addition, we need to bear in mind that one satellite is equipped with 3 to 4 terminals. So numbers are stacking up quite quickly when we talk about constellations like Amazon Kuiper. The traditional technology is radio frequency, but laser has a number of advantages over radio frequency. First of all, the bandwidth of laser is currently about 365 times higher than of traditional radio frequency. And due to physics, this advantage will only grow over time. Secondly, it is a privacy issue. When you think about radio frequency, you logically get an ever-increasing beam, which at the receiving end could be hundreds of kilometers wide. That's also why you need a license for radio frequency, which could be costly, time-consuming, and in many cases, it's regulated to avoid interference. The laser beam is very focused in comparison. At the receiving end, over a long distance, it is just a few meters. It is therefore license-free and very cost-competitive. And more importantly, it can't be intercepted or jammed, which is of enormous advantage. And this is not only a matter when it comes down to military requirements. Just to give you an example, at the time of the Ukraine war a few years ago, Western drones using radio frequency were intercepted by Russian defense. It was like in, think about the movie Ocean 11. The pictures showed everything being fine while the chest with the gold was plundered. Just in this case, the chest was troops being moved underneath and nobody noticed. this can't happen with laser. You can even add quantum cryptography to it if you want to. And finally, the power efficiency of laser is about 1,000 times more efficient than for radio frequency, lowering costs of operation dramatically. The two big market opportunities are communications in space and surveillance in air. Starting with communications, there are currently about 15 global companies intending to launch a satellite constellation. The leading player in this segment, as already mentioned, is SpaceX, with its mega constellation called Starlink, of which Bulent beforehand was the chief engineer, targeting up to 42,000 low orbiting satellites. What's important to know is that the lifetime of a low orbiting satellite is just about 4 to 5 years. Then it is being burned in the atmosphere. Hence, just to keep such a constellation at the intended number of satellites, one needs to launch about 8,000 to 10,000 satellites per year into space. And as mentioned before, equipped with 3 to 4 terminals, each with a price tag of up to 750,000 per terminal. Although this is a very big constellation, will get a heavy discount. But you see the principle, the numbers are getting mind-blowingly high. The biggest contender to SpaceX is Amazon's Kuiper, which just announced to be ready to spend north of $10 billion for this project. Here we talk about up to 13,000 satellites at its final stage. Just a few weeks ago, the FCC approved Amazon's Kuiper satellite constellation, encompassing a total of 3,236 satellites at this stage, but under a condition. And the condition is that Amazon has to be in operation 50% of those satellites by 2026, and the second 50% by 2029, which means from 2022 to 2026, 1,600 satellites need to be built, which is an average of about 400 per year. Again, each such satellite will contain 3 to 4 laser terminals, which Mynaric will price, let's say, around 200,000 to 300,000 per terminal. According to our information, Amazon does not have the plan to build own laser terminals, but will buy standard terminals instead. That makes Amazon a top candidate to become a Mynaric customer from next year onwards. And if you put the numbers together, such an order would probably be worth, just at the very beginning, about 400 million in annual sales, which would likely boost the fair value of the company from today's 250 million in market cap to well above a billion. Next in the line are Telesat, Viasat, and OneWeb, each of them in the hundreds to a couple of thousands of satellites. Mynaric already signed with one undisclosed customer last year, but was due to send the first satellites with their equipment on board to space in the fourth quarter of 2020. This, however, was stopped late July by the German government on the back of pressure from the US government. Although undisclosed, it is our understanding that the first client of Mynaric would have been a Singapore-based consortium with some Chinese background. And here we get into geopolitics. Yeah? While approved by the German government last year, forbidding it now means that Germany has to compensate Mynaric for any related loss. Although the loss on this single project is rather small at this stage, it is also surfaced that Mynaric intended to sell the China-related business to the former CEO for a price between 30 to 50 million based on the valuation assessment already done by PricewaterhouseCoopers. The government, again, has to compensate Mynaric also for this lost opportunity, providing the company with a compensation inflow of about 40 to 50 million in total, equivalent to about 20% of the current market cap. What it also means is that the US government, putting so much pressure on Germany, considers Mynaric as critical to the Western world, and thus we have here a very rare case of intervention. This is important in a different context. I'm coming back again in a few minutes. Let's first talk about the other big market opportunity, the surveillance in air, particularly with drones. Here we have more than 100 companies likely to enter into this area. Part of that for private commercial reasons and partly for governments. think about border control or home security. In terms of technology, a camera, even from outer space today, allows you to see the spoon at your breakfast table in your garden as clearly as you are sitting next to it. Quite scary in some respect, but it opens massive business models over time. While the typical ticket size is smaller with drones, the sheer magnitude of players should allow this business to be very sizable and profitable overall. This leads me to the third business angle, and that is a military-related one. A few years ago, you might remember that Russia launched the first super hypersonic missiles. Flying at massive speed, these rockets allowed to change course throughout their flight. And China followed suit. Actually, next to the US, India just became the fourth nation having hypersonic missiles just a few weeks ago. The critical element here is that today's NATO missile shield doesn't work against supersonic missiles. It needs a new defense mechanism, and for this you need to build a new satellite-based system. In the US, there are two agencies in charge of this mission. It's DARPA, the one we remember from the internet, etc., so the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is working on this subject on undisclosed terms, and a newly found organization called SDA, which stands for Space Developing Agency. The SDA started the process in February 2020, just at the beginning of this year, by inviting all parties to provide their initial ideas, which turned quickly into a formal tender process in May, with a swift conclusion of the awards in August. Clearly, time is here of the essence. The SDA only selected two offers, the York Consortium and the Lockheed Consortium. Airbus, with TESAT, is in charge of laser terminals in the Lockheed Consortium, while Mynaric and SA Photonics are each equipping some satellites with their respective technology within the York Consortium. So effectively, you have three competing laser technologies. The Tranche Zero, which is for testing purposes, is to be completed by the end of 22, which means the satellites have to be manufactured in late 21, early 22, and the laser terminals need to be ready by the second quarter next year as such. While we believe this is very straightforward for Mynaric, we doubt that SA Photonics will be capable to deliver, which to our knowledge never built laser terminals in volume before. And as far as Airbus with TESAT is concerned, they have a functioning laser terminal, but again, to our best knowledge, the terminal is way too big in size, inferior in technology, and much more expensive. While price might ultimately not matter for a government, the first two aspects mean that Airbus TESAT needs to work intensely to downsize and upgrade the laser in a very short time horizon. And being a large group is typically not helpful in such a context. The next phase, Tranche 1, will be awarded by the SDA by the end of 22 for delivery in 23 and 24. And it will be for about a three-digit number of satellites to be followed by Tranche 2 to be awarded in 24 for the completion of 300 satellite strong US SDA constellation. And to illustrate just how fast things are changing in this environment, the SDA, just weeks after the award, is indicating that the ultimate target is not 300 satellites, but rather 1,000. And here in this presentation, I'm just saying about 500 plus. Yeah? Altogether, this would be quite sizable, assuming those 1,000 satellites with 3 to 4 terminals each and a price tag of about 300,000 per terminal, amounting again to a billion plus of revenue, plus maintenance of probably about 200 million a year. They consistently come down. Aside from the potential order size, what matters most in the context of the SDA award is the credibility. Mynaric got through it. In fact, it is now crystal clear for everyone with a focus on this part of the business that Mynaric is the leading player in this mission-critical technology for the Western world. You can bet that this is not being unnoticed by all the global defense companies, And given some of the budgets, a market cap of just around 250 million is a total bargain. And there's another aspect of it. The total constellation of the SDA is just rather small, even if it is 1,000 satellites. It is very likely that the SDA will also want to access the satellites of SpaceX or Amazon Kuiper in order to achieve perfect interoperability with zero latency using the same supplier would at least make a lot of sense. Hence, this pushes these companies more towards Mynaric, in particular as the cost advantage of Mynaric versus Airbus TESA is dramatic. And just to add another thought, the newly built Eurofighter combat jet will be equipped with laser technology. And I'm sure some of you follow the recent simulator battle between humans and artificial intelligence, with artificial intelligence ultimately winning with the F-16 combats. So zero latency, secure connections, etc., are all of high demand here if that gets implemented in the future. This slide here just recaps again of what we just discussed over the past few minutes. It illustrates again the massive surge of satellite launches in the years ahead. And even that is not the end of the road. If you take the long-term targets of SpaceX, Amazon, Kuiper, etc. into account, you get to a number of about 10,000 launches per year towards the end of this decade, beginning of the next one, which is about 10 times higher than you see on the current scale of this chart. As mentioned at the beginning, Mynaric is more of a venture capital type of company with essentially no sales in 2019 and a small early stage loss of about 8 million. However, if our numbers are anywhere close to be right, these numbers should literally explode in the years ahead. As flagged before, just the order of Amazon Kuiper could account to revenues of 400 million annually as a start of the project Kuiper. So essentially, see the numbers in this slide more like an indication of the direction rather than a print being any precise forecast. They might be lower in 2021, maybe higher, but ultimately should substantially exceed and accelerate in the years ahead. And finally, on valuation, the share price has been in a sideways pattern for most of its stock market listing since 2017. That, however, changed over the last couple of months, triggered by the German government banning Mynaric from selling technology to China and the US SDA awarding Mynaric with an early stage contract. Both underline the critical technology Mynaric has built here over the years. Although it looks like expensive at this stage, the upcoming commercial and defense related orders are making this company a unique bargain in our point of view, as it is poised to set the industry standard for laser-based communications in aerospace. It is only covered by a few sell side houses, and barely anyone in the investment community knows about the company, and even less so own it. I think the fair value is everyone's best guess at this stage, and those of you interested in the company should do their own research and valuation you feel comfortable with. In our view, this can multiply many, many, many times over the coming years, if it stays an independent company at all. Unfortunately, also in our opinion, chances are rather high that somebody will take it over rather sooner than later. So that's the investment case in a nutshell. Happy to get your questions, John.
Well, Thomas, thank you so much for this fascinating presentation on a company I frankly had not heard of before until you mentioned to me recently that you would present it. And I'll just say before I launch into questions, with a technology like this where I have zero basis for understanding it personally, I turned to a good friend of mine who is a founder and CEO of a very successful micro or nano satellite startup. And he didn't tell me much, but he said that they have good quality of the products, Mynaric, that is. And that coming from an industry insider meant a lot to me. So I'll just share that as a data point here. Thomas, I'd be curious in terms of the finances of the company as we go through this inflection point. What does the cash flow look like? Will this company need additional funding?
It certainly will. I mean, you see the losses that we expect are not incredibly high. I mean, if you would compare that with the likes of Virgin Galactic or other companies that are already listed and traded and trading at 2 billion, et cetera, of market cap, I mean, this is a fraction of the loss and a fraction of the valuation. But with operation and scale being rolled out, they definitely need funding. So they made two capital increases over the past 1.5 years. One of them was the most remarkable one I've probably ever seen in my life. I mean, the stock was trading at about 35 euro and they made a 10% capital increase to the lead financing partner of this Singapore Chinese consortium at a price, I think if I remember correctly, around 55. So at a massive premium to the current share price. The most recent one was earlier this year. That was again a 10% capital increase. It was at the share price. And I think it is very much fair to assume that there will be another rights issue to come probably in the next weeks or months, which I think is all fine because, I mean, there will be an inflow of money from the German government, as we discussed before, of in the magnitude of 40, 50 million. That is very likely to come, but with government, it's always a bit difficult to judge when this is coming in. So I would rather assume this is a matter of 2021 for sure, probably even later next year. So they should not wait for that. Personally, I have no problem whatsoever for a company growing that fast and dramatic to take up equity. In that context, what we also might see, but again, more a topic for 2021, is that they might go for a second listing in the US. I mean, there are not a lot of European investors knowing the company or being in there. They rather tend to wait until they have an existing flow of businesses before they go for it. So I think here being in the US would open up certainly additional doors of financing. But I mean, I would buy it we own it, as we said at the beginning. So if there is a capital increase, we are happily participating in that and supporting that further.
The company like this that has a strategic value, and you mentioned the German government sort of preventing the company from doing a deal with China, I would assume that China, let's say, would have its own effort or would try to have its own effort in this area. Do you have any color on any of those kinds of things that kind of might be done on the competitive sphere by China or Russia or other players?
I mean, I read something about Russia doing some research on laser. I mean, I would be surprised if China is not doing it themselves either. I mean, to put things into a context, in a wider context, I mean, they've done research on laser, as I mentioned, for more than 20 years. And Bülent Altan was, as I said before, the chief engineer of SpaceX, and SpaceX is known for doing everything themselves. Yeah. So already under his regime, ever since the year, I think it was 2000 and for 7 years now they've done, so 2013 or so, SpaceX started to do research on laser themselves and is probably the most advanced one among all these players that are out there. And SpaceX very recently launched their own laser on a few satellites and tested it in space. And from what we understand, they are absolutely not happy with the performance of it. Half of the SpaceX team left to do some research at Amazon Kuiper. So, I mean, obviously that's a bit biased when you say what comes from Bulent here in terms of feedback, but essentially these were his former colleagues and teammates. And bottom line, I would say, chances are extremely high that Mynaric is going to prevail here, that Amazon is rather taking it from them. And SpaceX probably will only buy a few components from Mynaric, but otherwise do their own design. But more or less all the others seem to be relying on a standard project. Now, with China, it might be a bit different. If they are cut off from the Western world, then they have no other choice than developing themselves. But it doesn't seem to be a straightforward thing. Yeah. Also, the only existing product, to our knowledge, is TESAT, so Airbus TESAT. And to put it in a context, so if you have a low orbiting satellite, these are rather small satellites, and you need to put 3 to 4 laser terminals onto these satellites. So the terminal of Mynaric is as big as your shoebox. I mean, irrespective of your shoe size, I mean, you know the size, it's a small box. Yeah. In comparison, the same laser terminal from Airbus is as big as your cabinet. It's about 2 meters times 1 meter times 0.5 meter. So size that down. I mean, downsizing is not so straightforward and easy sometimes. Yeah, that's the challenge now Airbus has over the next literally 9 months in the context of the SDA project. But that is the only alternative. And even that one is not as good in terms of the quality as the Mynaric one. So there are a lot of obstacles here. And it's all about speed and setting the standard. I mean, Mynaric seems to be part of the standard setting groups in Europe and in the US. So, I mean, it really pays off to be very, very early on here. So we think the risk, to put it this way, the risk is that even Mynaric's one doesn't work. I mean, up until this point of time, no satellite equipped with Mynaric equipment has been in space. This was supposed to happen in Q4 with this Chinese Singapore-based consortium. And it was the general understanding of all people in the space industry that when you send something into space, it works. So that was the understanding. But I mean, the proof we don't have, because Mynaric was forbidden to send these satellites into space. So the first ones will be the SDA ones next year. That said, even for the very unlikely reason that it doesn't work, they would still have a massive lead over everyone else. I mean, all the other ones other than Airbus, even this SA Photonics, this is lab-based research. They have never built a terminal before. Yeah. So there's a lot of obstacles in between.
What are kind of the biggest hurdles, or what's next in terms of scaling this business? Is it just a matter of rollout now? Does something more need to happen on the product side? You know, tell us a little bit about the catalysts that you see going forward.
I think the most important thing that we just got was the confirmation of credibility that they have the leading product in the Western world, i.e. in the entire world, basically. Yeah? Because this is simply on the back of going through this SDA award process. Now, from here on, I think there is a commercial pressure, and that comes on the back of SpaceX. As I mentioned before, SpaceX is launching 2 rockets a month, 120 satellites. So this puts an enormous pressure on all the other satellite consortiums. So our understanding is that the Canadian consortium called Telesat is very likely to award laser communication terminals, most likely to Mynaric. We are not aware of anyone else, later this year, potentially. Amazon Kuiper, we just mentioned that the FCC awarded them the allowance to send up 3,000 out of the 13,000 into space under certain conditions. So here we should get an award probably early next year. But the pace setter here is SpaceX, and the others have to follow quickly. And don't forget, also SpaceX needs to keep running. I mean, these satellites have a lifetime of 4 to 5 years. If they would suddenly say, oh, let's stop this project, then and delay it by 6 months or 12 months, then satellites are coming down faster than they need to relaunch them again. You see the point. So I think the commercial pace setting is SpaceX, and that triggers all the others to follow. And the military pace setter is the SDA plus DARPA. DARPA is something we don't know exactly what they have in mind, but from what we understand, Mynaric will be part of that. And it could well be that also here we see in the next weeks, rather than months, an order from DARPA to build an own satellite-based defense system. So whatever happens here on planet Earth with COVID and economic crisis and whatever there is, that's the case. I think there is a clear route to build a satellite-based defense sheet that has nothing to do with the more crisis there is, the more conflict. I mean, when you read stuff in the press between Trump and China, I mean, all that triggers a race in space. And that is interlinked with the commercial aspect because they're going to piggyback on each other. So I think this is a very clear route, and I cannot see anyone else participating stronger than that. I mean, bear in mind, you have here a small company with a critical technology, and there are, I mean, when the SDA awarded the contract, I mean, this is happening together with all the orders from the Department of Defense. So they're being released 5 o'clock US time, East Coast time. So that's 10 o'clock my time in Europe. And 11 o'clock my time. And I was really staying up at late night to watch every day the award, yeah? Because typically that's the time when I'm already in bed and sleeping. But finally they got it. And the thing is that spending 2-3 weeks looking at all the awards that is being distributed by the Department of Defense, I mean, there are some mind-blowing budgets. This is so small. I mean, you cannot take over Airbus TASAT, but you can take over Mynaric. So I would be surprised if it stays separately. So coming back to your point, I think what we should see is a flow of orders. They might always start with a small order on the back of which there is, after it is being tested for the individual satellite consortium, there is the big order to follow. And this is, I think, something that after the SDA just happened in August, that should now come in the next weeks and months and quarters, one after the other. And I can only hope that Mynaric stays independent for as long as possible. But I mean, sooner or later, somebody will take it out.
Can you be a little bit more specific on that last point? Who would be potential acquirers? What kind of companies do you think would see the most synergy here?
Well, in principle, everyone operating in a related business. So in Europe, the logical companies would be Airbus, BAE Systems, or Thales. I mean, just think about Airbus in the context of the SDA award. I mean, Airbus is part of the Lockheed Consortium and Mynaric part of the York Consortium. And let's take into consideration that SA Photonics is a project-driven company, never scaling things, only doing projects one after the other. So if I would be Airbus, I would take over Mynaric and I have a guaranteed US defense order of a significant size. It would not even take me 5 minutes to consider that. Yeah. But Airbus is Airbus, and Airbus is very slow. Whether they come to that conclusion or not, they need to figure out themselves. So in the US, it could be everyone in the business, like Lockheed. It could be L3 Harry's. You name it. Yeah. It could also be the likes of Honeywell operating across a wider range of products. If I would need to make a guess, I would say it will be somebody from the US taking it over, because they will act much faster than the European players. But it will be one of those, very likely. Obviously, for what we mentioned before, it cannot be anyone in China, etc., or related to somebody close to China, yeah, on their behalf.
Well, that's very helpful. Thomas, this has been a great presentation. Thank you so much. Would you mind just showing the slide where you have your contact information, please, so that anybody watching this can follow up with their own thoughts or questions, and I'm sure you'll be happy to hear from them.
It'll be great. Much appreciated. Yeah.
Thank you, Thomas. All the very best to you, and hope you enjoyed the conference as well.
Very much so. Thank you again for the invitation, John. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.